It's 6 after 9. Good morning. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. Well, the health care reform debate is heating up in Congress and around the country, to say the least. This morning, Democrats in the House and Senate released a draft health care reform proposal. The American Medical Association came out in opposition to any sort of public insurance plan. And President Obama is in Green Bay today to conduct a discussion about health care reform. Then he'll speak at the convention of the American Medical Association next Monday in Chicago. Meanwhile, single-payer universal health care is still not on the table. This hour, we're going to hear from Dr. Ann Setgast, an MD, an internist from St. Paul, who is at the Center for International Health, where she provides primary care to an immigrant and refugee population. She is also co-founder of the Minnesota chapter of Physicians for a National Healthcare Program. Good morning, Dr. Setgast, and welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning. Thank you.
Well, let's start by talking a little bit about Physicians for a National Health Program. Who are these physicians and what do they want?
Sure. PNHP, Physicians for a National Health Program, is a national research and education organization of now more than 16,000 physicians who are dedicated to advocacy for a single-payer universal health care insurance system in the United States. So it is a physician organization that uses its research and education to help the country understand why we need single-payer.
And how are you doing so far?
You know, I think that recently, as you alluded to when you started, there is a lot more awareness of the single-payer option, and we, I think, are becoming the public and physicians certainly are becoming more aware that this is the way to solve our healthcare crisis, or in our minds, it's the only way that ethically and financially will be sustainable.
Senator Baucus and others, including Representative Steve Kagan from Wisconsin, who's also an MD, have said repeatedly that single-payer universal health care is a political non-starter. There aren't votes in either the House or the Senate to get it passed. So they said, well, we're going to work on something else. Why is single-payer such a tough sell?
You know, I think inertia is one of the problems. We have a system that is currently centered around the concept of private health insurance, and it's been that way for decades. And I think we're advocating a fundamental change, and you're right in terms of this continual reminder that it is not on the table. But the problem is that the American public actually is in favor of single payer when you look at large public opinion polls, and physicians are certainly in the majority in favor of a single payer system. And so I think if you're looking at what patients want and what physicians want, single payer is the answer. The gap that we have to close is this issue of the private insurance industry, which is certainly in the way of single payer, and it's a very powerful, lucrative industry.
Well, what about the AMA's position that was released this morning? That organization has now come out in opposition to any health care reform plan that includes any kind of public insurance option.
Mm-hmm. You know, traditionally, back in the 1960s when Medicare was being discussed and before it existed, there was opposition at that time as well by large physician groups. And now Medicare is certainly one of the most popular and most successful healthcare programs in the country. And so I think that, you know, that being said, the AMA is certainly not representing a majority of physicians in the United States anymore, and certainly not representing public opinion. And so, you know, unfortunately, what concerns us in PNHP is that options that simply leave the current system in place are fundamentally retaining a reliance on a system that is devoted to profit rather than care. And so our concern is that we need to take the focus of our healthcare system and focus it on patients receiving care rather than receiving profit.
So is the whole profit thing, is that what you see as being at the heart of the problem that we have with our healthcare situation here in the United States?
Well, I think the heart of the problem, you know, we have two problems that are the main problems. We have a system that is far from universal. As you know, we have nearly 50 million Americans without insurance coverage at this time. But we also have cost containment issues. And so the problem is that we're trying to couple how we can attain universal coverage and contain costs. And doing those two things together without a single-payer system is essentially impossible. And history, you know, decades of trying different reform options in various states have shown us that that simply does not work if we try and leave the insurance system in place. And this is because there is a tremendous amount of waste that goes into our health, that is a tremendous amount of waste within the current system because we are funneling dollars through a healthcare industry that is not providing care but simply providing administration that is very chaotic, complex, and bureaucratically too complex. And so to explain that a little bit, if you think about the cost that insurance companies have that something like Medicare doesn't have, you think about things like marketing insurance products, underwriting so that you can eliminate high-risk patients from your pool, things like CEO or management salaries, and things like profit. And those are all dollars being spent in those areas that aren't healthcare dollars. And so from a physician perspective, we would like to see those healthcare dollars taken and spent on patient care.
Well, there's a fundamental assumption that's become an axiom in the United States, and that is that the private sector is more efficient than the public sector at delivering any kind of services.
Mm-hmm. And I think that in some areas of the economy, that certainly may be true. I think in healthcare, the problem is that the product is different than things like flat screen TVs or Coca-Cola. When you look at healthcare, I don't think of it as a commodity that is similar to something that Americans can shop for and buy the way other products can be. And this is because healthcare is something that we all need, and it is a human right, and it's not something that we can predict our need for necessarily. The problem is no matter how you live your life, if you do all of the things right in terms of your lifestyle, you don't smoke, you exercise, et cetera, you still are likely to need health care that you cannot prepare for.
We're talking about health care reform. There's a lot of stuff happening. There have been a lot of press releases issued. I'll play this inning for just a moment. I'm not going to say a lot of stuff is happening. There have been a lot of press releases issued. This morning, the leaders in the House and Senate announced, the committee leaders announced their plans that are moving forward. There has been an announcement. I think Kent Conrad, a senator from North Dakota, has proposed a cooperative plan as a way to get maybe some Republicans on board who don't want any public money involved in health care at all, if they can help it. The proposal is to establish member-run health care cooperatives. The AMA came out in opposition to any kind of public insurance plan. On the other hand, you have members of the House, Steve Kagan from Wisconsin among them, were proposing plans that would force all insurers to have the same coverage so that they would be competing on price and customer service rather than on what their plans contained, and a public plan that would be competitive with that to force more price competition in the marketplace. So a lot of things out there today, and we're trying to sort through all of this. My guest is Ann Setgast, an MD from the Twin Cities, and we're talking about single-payer universal health care as one of the proposals, but that's not one that's getting any traction at all in Congress. And we're kind of talking about why that is and what the difference is between single-payer universal health care and other proposals. We're already getting tons and tons of phone calls, Dr. Setgast, and I think we'll start taking calls maybe a little earlier than I normally would, just because so many people want to talk about this. And by the way, President Obama is in Wisconsin today. He'll be conducting kind of a roundtable or town hall meeting type of thing in Green Bay today. Let's go to the phones, and we'll start with Jim in Galena, Illinois. Jim, good morning.
Thank you for taking the phone call. I retired in 1995. I worked about 30-some-odd years in the negotiating business, insurance policies, and we serviced 38 different plants in four states. And I can tell you that the price of insurance from 1965 to 1995 family coverage went from about $300 a month up to $1,200 a month. And the businesses, not right now, it's more than that. It's right at $1,400 a month per family coverage. Plus, they want to exclude a lot of things. The business community cannot afford to continue to pay for health care coverage and stay in business. We're all paying for it right now. It's tacked on the price of the cars. It's tacked on the price of the refrigerators. It's tacked on the price of the TVs. It's tacked on the price at Walmart. Everything you do, you buy, you're paying for your insurance now. Now, I do agree with one thing. I don't think we can automatically go to a single-payer plan immediately. But I do believe that the only way to save this country and save these business communities is to go with an option to where they have a government option plan to compete with the private section to force them to keep their prices down. Right now, the insurance industry takes 35 to 37% right off the top of your premium for profit and salaries. I know that because I was in it, and it's still that way. And the other thing that happens is if you got a business that's got 12,000 employees, you get a much better break on your insurance coverage, better package, less money than you do than if you have a company that's got 150 employees, because they average the age out, and that's just the way they work. So you've got, eventually, we're going to have to go to a single-payer plan, but we're going to have to do it in steps.
And Jim, I'd like to thank you very much for those comments, and certainly the unaffordability of healthcare coverage is something that you've just laid out, and I think this is really well described in a recent study just 2 weeks ago. Bankruptcy in the United States, and the problem is more than half of American bankruptcies are directly related to unaffordable medical bills. But I think that the problem, and this is the key when you think about this study that just came out, is that of the Americans who went bankrupt due to medical bills, more than three-quarters of them actually had insurance. They had their bankrupting illness. And so I think this is a very strong argument for why simply getting all of us covered is not the answer. As a doctor, I know that health care is different than health insurance. I take care of insured people regularly who still are not able to access the care that they need. And so my concern is that if we just cover everyone, we've still left people open to the possibility of financial ruin due to their illness, and we're still not actually getting care to all Americans. And so that's why, you know, talking about incremental steps that simply try and expand our coverage, I do not believe are the answer.
I agree with you. Don't get me wrong. I agree with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's possible to do in one step because the insurance companies are so powerful.
But that's where I think we need the will of the people to speak louder than the will of the insurance company.
Well, I hope you win your battle.
Thank you.
Well, the insurance companies, the health insurance industry spends, read about somewhere north of $500 million a year.
Right, and so money is not the way that we will win this battle. We won't win because we have more money. I think we will win because the American public has to finally demand that single-payer is on the table, because we know it is the only option that works. It's the only option that medically, ethically, and financially makes sense and is actually sustainable.
The phone number to join our conversation here this morning is 800-486-8655. One line available if you call right now. A lot of people want to get in on this and have a lot to say. We'll go to some more phone calls after we take a short break, and we'll be right back. We're talking about health care in the United States. Health care reform is a big agenda item in Congress right now, and it's being discussed all over the place, including here on Wisconsin Public Radio. President Obama is in Green Bay today to talk about health care reform. Next Monday, he'll be talking to the convention of the American Medical Association. Members of Congress have come out with a variety of different plans. There's a lot of discussion going on. Today, we're focusing this hour a little bit on universal health care, a single-payer system that's being proposed by quite a few doctors. And my guest is Dr. Ann Setgast, an MD from the Twin Cities, and we'll be back to talk with her and with you after we take a short break. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 922, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up later on today on the Ideas Network. They say the world is shrinking, so what can we do to feel more comfortable with our neighbors? Travel. After 3 on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders, Gene Faraca talks with acclaimed travel writer Rick Steves about what it means to travel with our place in the world in mind. After 3 o'clock today, Here on Earth with Gene Faraca. This hour, it's healthcare issues. Healthcare reform is the topic under discussion, and we have full phone lines. Let me reintroduce our guest. Dr. Ann Setgast is an internist from St. Paul who is in the Center for International Health, where she provides primary care to an immigrant and refugee population. She was also a co-founder of the Minnesota Chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program. Let's go to Tom in Sobieski next. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. One of my comments is I took care of a guy from Germany, and there they have a two-system plan. They got the government plan and the regular private plan. And the first thing he said to us, is this the good care or the bad care? And from that standpoint, I would not like to see the insurance companies, Obama have his government plan and the private plans, because it'll develop a two-tier system which will eliminate the richer people from the public system, and probably the public system, being that it wouldn't be funded as well, would probably be a second-rate care, just like in Germany. The other thing is the management cost of health care, if we go to a one-payer system, would probably get rid of your doctor's insurance cost for claims against them. It would, the cost for processing for doctors, for hospitals, would be eliminated to a degree. There wouldn't be all this coding that would be required. The only problem I can see is with the insurance companies be eliminated from the situation is it would put a lot of people out of business. So I agree with your caller on the step-by-step approach, and maybe convert the insurance companies from being profit centers to working for the government somehow to distribute payment and make sure that both the needs of the people are made instead of denying them care.
So
Tom, thanks
up,
for the call.
Thank you very much. You brought up three very important issues. And the first one, you mentioned the two-tier system in Germany, and I think it's important for listeners to recognize that a single-payer system that is being advocated by PNHP is a one-tier system. Everybody is in, nobody is out. The coverage for every American would be the same, whether you are the president or a congressman or whether you are an average citizen. So there would be no second tier. The thing that you mentioned about costs for doctors and hospitals, administrative costs, is very critical to understanding what single-payer is. And I think it's an important opportunity to take just a minute in case there is a listener who does not understand what single-payer means. Right now we have a multi-payer system. So in other words, as a provider, as a physician working in a clinic, I see patients and we bill multiple payers. We have a multi-payer system because patients may have, each one have different insurance coverage. Single-payer refers to simply having one payer. All the bills go to one place, just like with Medicare now. And so there would be tremendous savings, as the caller mentioned, because doctors and hospitals would no longer have billing departments that are bogged down trying to collect payment from multiple payers. And a good example of this is in a 500-bed hospital in Canada, the billing department on average employs about 10 people, whereas the same-sized hospital in the United States requires about 50 people, or five times that in the same billing department, because of our difficulty in collecting money from so many different payers. And then the third thing the caller mentioned that I think is very important, and this question often comes up, is what happens to the industry, to all of these people who are working in the insurance industry? And this is very important because there is unnecessary work going on in the administrative tasks of running a multi-payer system. So the first thing that I think is important to remember is all people who would be out of jobs under single payer would, first of all, not lose their health care coverage. And that is huge, because one of the first things that people worry about when they lose their jobs is that they lose their health care coverage. But the second is that these people are highly trained, skilled people with skills that can be used in other parts of the economy, especially as the health care sector grows because we're bringing 50 million uninsured people into the system. And so, you know, that is an unfortunate reality of switching to single payer, but it is certainly a reasonable price to pay for bringing in 50 million Americans and providing health care to the entire country.
Well, that's really there's really a kind of a dichotomy here, because you've got, on the one hand, you have this need, you have these 50 million people who don't get the care that they need, and on the other hand, you have people talking about how disruptive making that changeover would be, and then I guess the third piece of this is you've got some people, the more perhaps pragmatic among us, who are saying, listen, we're never going to get universal single payer. We only have one shot at this with this Congress at this time. We're going to have to try to put together the best system that we can get passed. Maybe not the best system, the one that would work the best, but the best one that we can make happen politically. And you know, all these other arguments are just not going to get us anywhere. So, I mean, how do you respond to that?
Well, about the disruptiveness of a transition to single payer, I ask, disruptive to who? I mean, for a patient, there would be nothing disruptive about single payer. Suddenly, as a patient, you would actually be able to access your doctor without interference from an insurance company. So you would have free choice of doctors. So you would no longer have, nobody would be out of network in a single payer system. All doctors would be in the system. And so you, as a patient, the disruption would be nil. And in fact, for the 50 million people that don't have coverage, they would have access. For physicians, the disruption would not be present as well. In fact, things would become much easier. We would be able to take care of patients without wondering which plan they have, and is this test or is this drug covered for this patient but not for this patient. I mean, our level of work would become much easier on a daily basis. I think the system would be very disruptive to the private insurance industry. And so I think when we talk about disruption, we need to make sure we know who is disrupted by single payer.
Well, the disruption will be to the private insurance industry, mm-hmm. and its shareholders, one
Correct.
Of which might be your pension plan.
Mm-hmm. But this comes back to whether you think our healthcare system should be designed around producing profits or producing care. And I'm much more concerned about my patients than stakeholders. I think that the profit in healthcare is misplaced. I think that stakeholder interests are certainly less important than patient interests.
What about, I mean, one of the, there are a number of arguments made against universal single payer, and one of the most common ones, and I'm not exactly sure where this comes from, is that under that plan, individuals would no longer be able to choose their doctors.
So that is absolutely false. What patients would not be able to choose under single payer would be their insurance plan. And the majority of Americans would agree, I believe, that what you want, if you are a patient, is you want to choose your doctor, you want to be able to choose your hospital, you want to be able to, with your doctor, choose your treatments that you're going to need if you become sick. What patients don't care so much about is whether they are part of Plan A, Plan B, or Plan C. They want care, not coverage. And so you would, under a single-payer system, lose your choice of insurance plan because you would have comprehensive insurance that would cover all medically necessary care.
Let's take some more calls. We have full phone banks. Everybody wants to get in on this, and I don't blame them. This is a big deal. We'll go to Charles in Lake County, Illinois next. Hi, Charles.
Good morning. When we're thinking about this perennial problem of health care, we should be aware that we pay about $1.3 trillion a year, or this 09, for health care, and then the public and the taxpayer is paying $1.1 trillion, just about half. But when we figure the tax breaks that our industry gets when they cover health care and all the other tax breaks for health care, the taxpayer is paying half of all of the health care that we get. This is from the Statistical Abstract, United States, Bush's figures, 2009. So it's ridiculous.
So,
we're paying half of the money already.
Yep, and this is true. And I think you bring up an even more interesting observation, and that is, as you mentioned, we already pay more than 50% of the health care budget is already paid for through taxes in the United States. You're correct about that. And what this means is that a taxpayer, remember, of the 50 million uninsured Americans, the majority of these people are working. These are people who work and simply do not have access to health insurance through their jobs or through the means to buy it individually. And so these taxpaying Americans are actually, these uninsured taxpaying Americans are actually subsidizing insurance, because through our tax dollars we are paying for a vast, large part of our health care costs. And so you actually have a sick kind of perverse system of uninsured Americans subsidizing health care for those who are insured.
Thanks for the call, Charles. Let's go to Ann in Madison next. Hi, Ann. Good morning.
Hi. There's a little echo on the phone, so I hope it's not on the other end, too. Senator Max Baucus recently, a couple of weeks ago, had doctors and nurses who supported a single-payer system arrested for disrupting his very cozy meeting that didn't include people who supported the single-payer system. And it seems to me that while parroting the mantra that single-payer systems are socialized medicine, every member of Congress, and I believe every public employee in the whole country, has a more or less blue ribbon socialized medicine system, while they deny that same system of what they call socialized medicine, which is, you know, treated as if it were a system of the Soviet Union, to the public who they're supposed to serve. They are public servants. And Max Baucus, I believe, has taken about $500,000 from the insurance and HMO industry, and he is treating it as a bribe, as are most members of Congress. So the reason we don't have a single-payer system, which most countries that are civilized have, is that our members of Congress are taking huge bribes from all kinds of medical corporations.
Thanks for the call, Ann. Interesting point. One of the things, when we hear about socialized medicine, people assume that doctors are going to be working for the government, but that's not what you're proposing.
This is a very important distinction, and I'm glad, Ann, thank you for bringing up this topic, because you do hear, especially in speakers who are trying to elicit fear in Americans, you will hear this socialized medicine term. And I think what you need to think of, single-payer is socialized financing, but not socialized medicine. So a single payer is a system that would be publicly funded but privately delivered. So the delivery system of doctors and hospitals would look the same as it is now. Doctors would not become employees of the United States government. That is a socialized system. Rather, they would be paid by the United States government, just as they are now through Medicare. And so when I speak to the public, I always explain that you should fear single payer no more than you fear turning 65 in our country. Medicare is an example of a single payer system within the United States that already exists and is very popular. And this program, this fear of socialized medicine is unfounded. You should fear, if you fear Medicare, then you would fear single payer.
What about Ann's point that we already have it to a certain degree for employees of the federal government and other public employees?
So the Federal Employee Health Benefit Program, I think, is what you're referring to. And this is a system where federal money, public money, and that's our tax dollars, as the previous caller referred to, is being used to purchase insurance for federal employees. And so this is still a system based on private insurance. We're still taking public money, funneling it through the private insurance industry in order to provide care to that set of employees.
You used the Medicare example. One of the things I read, in fact, I think this was something that came up in Bill Moyer's journal from May 22nd. They talked about how there is supplemental Medicare insurance, and how insurance companies kind of cherry-pick the population. For example, their office might be on the second floor of a building, and you have to go up the stairs to be able to apply for the insurance and things like that. And what would be, you know, in the kind of system that's being proposed in Congress now, what would prevent the insurance companies from cherry-picking the population?
Well, that's exactly one of the concerns about going to a system where we have a public option in competition with the private plans, with the private industry, because that it is very difficult to compete with an industry that has, there is a science behind selectively recruiting healthier patients into your plan. And so to compete with a system that is designed, remember, and this is where I think the difference between physicians and insurance happens, because as a physician, my goal is to care for sick patients. That's why I'm a doctor. But if your goal is the bottom line because you are a profit-making industry, your goal ultimately has to be to avoid the sick patients. I mean, there is no way to make money through insurance if you take all of the sick patients. And so there is a science to recruiting these healthier people and what you call cherry picking. And that is one of the concerns, is that the public option could become a dumping ground for sick patients because it would actually be open to them.
Well, and you almost never know what the insurance companies are going to employ for criteria next. For example, right now, insurance companies are starting to use credit scores to determine homeowners' insurance rates. What's to stop them from saying, well, your credit score is low, that probably means you're not healthy, so we're going to jack up your rate?
I mean, the loopholes, the ways around coverage are numerous and are too many to even name. I mean, any physician or patient can provide horror stories of patients who had coverage but somehow didn't, who had insurance coverage but somehow did not get their bills paid or their care that they needed. And I recently heard an analogy that I think is a good analogy, and it was the idea that a product of private health insurance is similar to an umbrella that melts when it rains. So you have the umbrella with you and you think you're covered, but you don't know until it rains that it actually doesn't work. And I think this is what often happens with people who have private insurance, is they find out that when they need it, it's actually not what they need.
Well, that reminds me of the analogy that used to be made about banks. A bank is someone who takes away your umbrella when it's raining. Okay. Let's go to Tom in Burlington next. Good morning, Tom.
Congressman Kagan's idea of standardizing the services offered, I really do support that. If we can't get the single-payer program I wanted to point out that if the American public realized what your caller, one of the previous callers, said, how we've lost jobs in our country now. If the American public realized that our insurance business is keeping us uncompetitive in the world global economy, which is one thing we really have to keep in mind. But I'd like to ask you this: there's a group of people here that, if you zero in on a very sick group of people we know is going to be sick, are the cigarette smokers, and they put money in the sin tax, and the sin tax money maybe should go into a hospital medical program especially designed for this group of people. But I want to ask you this question: what is the country that has the best single medical paying program that we could use as a model for our program to be built on, or are there two models someplace in the world that you would kind of recommend that we put together to make the thing work?
So I think that right now the perfect model doesn't exist. I think that is where the United States has a unique opportunity to actually do things very well. I think a good model to look at is Canada's system. Canada's system is not perfect, but they do have a single-payer system. What's important to remember when looking at Canada's system is they have universal coverage, so Canadians are covered 100%. They do spend less than half per capita what America spends on health care. And so with spending levels that are double what Canada spends, we could potentially in the United States devise an American single-payer system that would be the Cadillac of all health care systems. Not to say it would be a panacea and solve every healthcare crisis, solve every healthcare problem, like smoking, for example. But certainly, we could finance healthcare in a way that would make our system far superior to any other system that is out there.
Let's take a call next from Mike in Kenosha. Mike, good morning.
What I'd like to suggest is that the best approach to achieving coverage is for the government to either purchase the healthcare underwriting companies, or to negotiate and purchase from these underwriting companies the right to serve the individual customers.
But I guess I would argue under single payer you wouldn't need underwriting. Underwriting is an exercise in determining which patients are so sick that you cannot afford to cover them. And in the single payer system, every person would be covered. And so underwriting would become unnecessary. Just like in Medicare, the only criteria is age. You don't have to Medicare does not distinguish patients or does not deny care based on certain pre-existing conditions, and so that would be the basis of a single-payer system as well.
Right. What I'm saying is as a mechanism for eliminating the insurance companies from the equation, we purchase the underwriting companies or the companies that sell health and healthcare insurance so that we immediately realize that 35% decrease in cost by eliminating the insurance company's 35% profit.
Okay, I think, insurance is kind of a form of legalized gambling, isn't it? I mean, you know, if you buy automobile insurance, your insurance company's betting you aren't going to have an accident, and you're betting that you are. So it's sort of like, it's like craps.
Well, and the problem with insurance in the world of health, I mean, if you're selling insurance because you're homeowner's insurance, for example, the chances are most homes aren't going to burn or flood, et cetera. But the problem with health care and treating it the same as these other ideas is that everyone will eventually need health care, no matter how healthy you are, or what kind of lifestyle choices you make. And that's why I think it's difficult to treat health care the way we treat other commodities.
Let's see. We need to take a break, so let's do that. And when we come back, we have more callers who want to join us. There's still a line available for you if you'd like to get in. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. You can also send an email. The address is talk@WPR.org. We do have an email we'll read when we come back. We're talking about healthcare reform, and our focus today is on universal single payer. Please join us. We'll be right back. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9:45. Here's what's coming up next hour. Well, we're going to talk about going green from the top down. Rooftop gardens. Green roofs. That's coming up next hour. This hour, we're talking about health care reform. A lot of news breaking today on that topic. Members of Congress releasing various plans. The President of the United States is in Green Bay today to talk about health care. The AMA came out against any kind of health care reform package that includes a public insurance option. This hour, we're talking about universal single payer health care plans, and we have an expert with us to help us sort through all of the various pieces of information and misinformation that's out there about this. Dr. Ann Setgast is a national leader of Physicians for National Health program, and she's with us by phone, and so are a whole bunch of other people, including Jan in Lake Nabagaman. Let's hear from Jan next. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for talking about this, a great topic. I want to talk a little bit about some of those misconceptions. One thing that you always hear from people, and they say, well, we have the best health care in the world. Why would we want to change it? And I'm sure your guest is familiar with a study that the World Health Organization did that put the U.S. in number 37 in delivery of and access to health care. I mean, that's not really a statistic that we should defend. I mean, 37? We're behind Colombia. We're behind, well, a host of other countries.
And I think so. I think, Jan, I think we can all be right. I think there are people who say America has the best health care in the world, and they can be correct. What you can't say is we have the best health care system in the world. I think that's an important distinction, and it's that word system. I would argue that we have a non-system in the United States. We have a fragmentation where some people have good access, some people have no access. And so if you're one of the people who has good private insurance coverage that actually covers you, you may have the potential to access the best health care in the world here in the United States. But we do not have the best healthcare system in the world. And that is why when you look at indicators, things like life expectancy, infant mortality, maternal mortality, the United States fares very poorly. We are nowhere near the top of those lists. And it's because, I would argue, although there are multiple things that go into coming up with statistics regarding mortality, but the point is the one thing that sets us apart from the rest of the industrialized world is we do not have a national program that actually covers all of our citizens.
And, can I have another,
go ahead.
One more comment? Another thing, they say Canadians don't like their healthcare system, but they voted the guy who developed it the most popular person in their country. But I went to one of the Obama healthcare meetings last Saturday in northern Wisconsin, and it was supposed to be for promoting or getting together an event around the idea of the single payer option or the government option. And there was actually someone there from the health insurance industry who disrupted the whole meeting and pretty much made it impossible for the people to move forward with anything. He kept telling people at the meeting that none of us knew enough about the programs and the bill because it was way too complicated for us. We couldn't hope to understand it. Only he understood it. And that it was pretty amazing to have somebody from the healthcare industry, he identified himself as such, there disrupting the meeting.
Single payer, I think it's not complicated. It's quite simple. And it scares people if they aren't familiar with the terms. But it's just simply saying that instead of having multiple payers paying the healthcare bills, we would simply have all healthcare bills go to one payer, which would be the U.S. government, which would be similar to how Medicare operates now. And so I think don't be fooled into thinking that this is too complex. It's something that everyone can understand, and it's quite simple, actually.
Scott in Sturgeon Bay is next. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. I've just got two quick points. One of them is the issue I have with single payer is no matter how you try and spin it and no matter how you say you're going to have fine cost savings, we as a nation are broke. We do not have the money. When you look at the trillions of dollars of deficits we're running right now, we don't have it. That's point number one. Point number two is I'm not trying to defend the insurance companies, but my concern here is trying to lower overall costs. Has anybody looked at their bills? I mean, you want to talk about where the cost comes into play. If I go to a doctor, and I'm going to take the insurance company out of it, if I go to a doctor, if I have my checkup or physical or whatever work, the cost, regardless of who's paying it, is astronomical at the medical level. Would I pay for any doctor fees, any services provided, if, God forbid, somebody's got to go in for surgery, those costs are astronomical. And it doesn't matter who's paying the bill, what we pay for our medical services is extremely high in the United States.
Right. So you've brought up two very good points. The first, commenting on, we do not have enough money. I would argue that we do. The problem with our healthcare system is not that we do not have enough money. The United States spends 17% of our GDP on healthcare. We spend more than any other country. So the problem is not that we do not have enough money in the system. The problem is that we need a new system. The money is there, but what we need to do is funnel it into healthcare rather than administrative waste, which directly ties to your second point, which is doctor bills being so high. One thing that you need to think about, and this is not the sole reason that medical costs are high, but one of the things driving up these costs is that from a perspective of a hospital or a doctor's office, like I mentioned before, you are employing large numbers of people in your office simply to administer this system. It is very expensive to collect payment from multiple payers who are going to argue and try to avoid payment for each patient. That is a very expensive process when you have social workers and administrative office workers arguing with insurance companies trying to get payment. If you eliminated that entire sector, you would have a tremendous savings. The Government Accountability Office estimates that by transitioning to single payer, we would save $400 billion annually in administrative costs. So you cut that right off the top.
Well, to Scott's point, though, I mean, when I look at my bill, so, and it shows that, let's say I went to visit my doctor. Well, I not only visited the doctor, but I may have had several tests. And so when I actually see my statement, it'll show so much for the office visit and so much for supplies and so much for this. When it shows, the doctor's portion of that, the doctor visit. Now, that let's say it was $200, and I don't know what it is, but I'll just pick a number out of the air. For argument purposes, that $200 isn't going into the pocket of the doctor. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. 31 cents in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2003 published a study showing that 31 cents of the American healthcare dollar goes to administering our system. And this is more than double what most industrialized countries spend on administration because they have some form of national health insurance, and they do not bill multiple payers like the United States does. So in that $200, if you're thinking, 31 cents is going to administering the system. And that money is money that I would argue as a physician is not being spent on patient care. And what I would argue is that we should take that administrative money, cut it way down, and actually put that money into patient care.
Here's an email from Dave who says, I'm on Medicare, which is a very successful single-payer system, and it would be easy to improve that system and apply it to everyone. With everyone on it, the cost would be one-fifth of the current system, and we must uncouple health care from the job system. That's from Dave. Well, that's pretty much what you've been saying, Doctor.
Right. I don't have much to add to that. Yep.
Well, then let's go to Margaret in Sun Prairie next. Hi, Margaret. Good morning.
Good morning, John and Dr. Setcast. This is a fantastic and timely discussion. My question, I have two, but I'll let you decide which or both if you can answer. The first question is, I'm a new small business owner, and I have to purchase my own health insurance and have for a long time. I have a pre-existing condition, so it's hard for me to get insurance. So I every 6 months, they send me a letter, and they say, because of rising health care costs, they're going to up my premium, which is now approximately $680. And I have a $3,500 deductible, and they keep giving me the option of upping it to a $10,000, $15,000, or $20,000 deductible to bring my cost down under $600. So my question is, I have thought about applying for the Wisconsin State HIRSP insurance. It's for individuals who have a difficulty getting insurance. If I were to do that now, and this single-payer plan went through, would I then be considered insured and I would not be able to be part of that plan? So that's my first question. The second question.
Well, hang on. Let me get the – we're getting running really late in the program. Let me have the doctor answer your first question, and then we'll see how much time we have left. Hang on, Margaret.
So under single-payer, all Americans would be covered universally. So it would be universal comprehensive coverage. So – you would not need another insurance plan under a single-payer system. And I'm glad that you brought up the high deductible issue, just because this is ludicrous. I mean, you mentioned a $3,500 deductible that you could actually choose to have it higher. I mean, personally, every day when I see patients, people with high deductible plans do not get the care they need. If you have a low to moderate income, and your deductible is several thousand dollars, and you need an MRI that I order, what are the chances that you're going to get that? Because it's an expensive test, and you're going to have to pay out of pocket. So the big push that you hear, you know, some people argue that we need these high deductible plans because they make people more responsible. It is simply not true. People need health care. This creates a system where you have coverage. This is a great example of someone who has coverage but not care.
And Margaret, I'm sorry, I'm just going to have to move on because we still have full phone banks and we only have about another 2 minutes left. Let's go to Gil in Wauwatosa, or Wausau, I'm sorry.
There you go. Well, I just had a couple of statements, and I'd really like to see you guys start your own lobbying group. And with 70% of this nation's population wanting a better insurance, wanting something better, I'm going to send you $2 today, and if we can get everybody doing that, you're going to have more money than the insurance company has. And let's get this thing. Let's buy our votes just like they buy theirs.
Okay. Gail, we're running out of time. Doctor, you're already doing some lobbying, your group, isn't it?
Well, you know, this issue, we're never going to have as much money as the private health insurance industry is exceptionally, exceptionally profitable and lucrative. But what I think is important and what we're hearing today in the callers is that Americans are smarter than we think. I mean, people know that they are not getting what they pay for in the healthcare system as it stands right now. And I think as the groundswell continues and as patients continue to demand true healthcare, not just health insurance coverage, I think, you know, rather than spending more money, I think what we need to do is make sure that your representatives in the U.S. Congress and the Senate hear from you and make sure that they realize that what the public and physicians support.
Some people are concerned, and we only have a few seconds left. I almost hate to introduce this new topic, but some people are concerned that if we have universal single payer, that the quality of our health care is going to somehow decrease.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that would be based on. I would say that the only way to go in terms of quality that would be up under a single-payer system, because remember right now you have people who do not access the system. So if you're uninsured and you have high blood pressure, you know, rather than getting that cared for by your primary care doctor, we wait until you have your stroke and then you present to the ER and then you get high-tech, you know, state-of-the-art care during that catastrophic event. I mean, the quality, I would say, would be much much better if we actually took care of people up front, took care of their hypertension, controlled their chronic medical illnesses, and kept them healthy. There's no reason to think that quality would suffer under single payer any more than you think quality suffers now when you turn 65 and get Medicare.
Okay, and we're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time. Dr. Setgast, thank you for spending this hour with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
This program was produced by Rhonda Fanning, who also handled on-air production. If you'd like to hear it all again, go to WPR.org. You can listen to the whole hour. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about green roofs next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.